Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the On Deck podcast, part of the Over the Monster podcast network. I am your host, Bob Osgood, and today we have an exciting episode lined up for you all, focusing on the Red Sox farm system. Let's dive right into it. Joining me today is Matt Collins. Matt, what's going on?
Not too much. Excited to talk prospects and not anything that's happening with the major leagues today. Well, that sounds like a nice thing.
Stay away from that for a couple of days, I agree. Also joining me, Jake Devereaux. Jake, what's happening? Good to talk to you.
What's going on, Bob? It's been like a week since we've talked, so it's nice. We're keeping up a little bit of a rapport here. It's
good. Not bad.
Well, yeah.
Enough pleasantries. We're going to take a look at some of the top prospect assignments at each level today, kind of look at things at a high level and then dive into a player that each of us has an eye on this season, and at some levels, maybe two players that are interesting. We'll go through the Worcester Red Sox and Worcester Mass at AAA, Portland Sea Dogs at AA in Maine, the Greenville Drive at High A in South Carolina, and Salem Red Sox at Low A in Virginia. I thought it'd be good to start, though, with three players that seem to be at the top three in just about every Red Sox prospect list that you look at. They seem to kind of be a cut above, and I think that either way people are going to want to hear about these three players, so we'll kind of separate that at the beginning, starting with Tristan Casas. And Jake, entering the season, what were your expectations for Casas, and has any of that changed in the first couple weeks of the season, whether that's the player or what's going on at the major league team, and kind of your outlook for Casas this season?
Well, my expectations for him, I guess I'll start there, were that he would continue to improve on the offensive performance that he showed last season. Last season he jumped a couple different levels. He was at AA, and then he finished the season at AAA. He also had the Olympic appearance squeezed between there. One of the things I liked to see from him last year that we did see was he was still walking a ton. That walk rate stayed pretty much steady. And his strikeout rate stayed pretty much the same at both levels. It was about 19% at both levels. He hit for power at both levels. and the defense is pretty good. So, you know, the guy's kind of the whole package. And what we're seeing here in the early going is much of the same. To start off the season, he's got 3 home runs, a 17.2% walk rate, striking out just 19%, which is typical for him. And high OBP, 379 OBP. So he's kind of doing everything. I'd like to see him dominate that level a little bit more. To be truthful, I think that he could post an even better batting average than the 239 that he's sporting right now. I think there's some potential for him to get hot, and I would love to see him push that slugging percentage up into the 500s. Right now it's 478, and over the last couple of levels last year, he was right around 485. So I think there's more growth there in terms of power. He doesn't focus on power very much. He's talked about that a lot. You know, he's not looking to always destroy the ball because, you know, as he said, he's a big enough guy that he really doesn't have to. But we have seen what happens when he gets a hold of a baseball. It goes about 500 feet. So it's pretty absurd. I am expecting him to make the major leagues this year, though. He doesn't have a ton left to prove at AAA. And Mr. Dalbec might not really give much reason for him not to be called up, because Dalbec has a WRC plus under 50 right now. So Casas could probably pretty easily come up and beat that. So I expect him to debut somewhere around June.
Yep, and with Dalbec, you and I were on opposite ends of the spectrum going into the season, and you've been right about that so far. And I don't think that Travis Shaw is really providing much of a platoon over there from what we've seen. So I think, you know, we'll probably start to hear people asking that question, if they haven't already, when we're going to see Casas. And I think
they've started already.
Yeah. Fair enough. And everybody wants to see the next big thing. And we were looking for that last year with Jaron Duran. And sometimes you just need to make sure that the player is ready. Or, you know, with Casas, maybe we just need to see for a couple of weeks whether he's ready. But you're right, the walk rate is just ridiculous. You know, 19% when he got to AAA last year and 17% this year. And it's, you know, at the very least, he's going to have a good eye up there. It'll be interesting to see if he carries that over to the major leagues. Matt, looking at Marcelo Meyer, the most recent first-round pick, dropped to number 4. In your opinion, is this the best prospect in the system? Or is that Casas? And kind of what are your expectations for Meyer?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I would probably go... I'd probably go Casas just because I value not just the closeness to the majors probably a little bit more. But I mean, if you're looking at pure upside and what the best reasonable best-case scenario for both players is, I mean, it's Meyer, and I don't even think it's particularly close. It's... he's the most exciting player in the system, I would say, just because of, I mean, it comes down really to positional value with him versus Casas. He's a shortstop, and he's a guy that should stick at shortstop. He's a really good athlete. He's got the arm to play on the left side of the infield. He's got the instincts. He's got the makeup to stay there. And he's got the kind of bat that can turn into an all-star kind of player on a consistent basis. Obviously, he just got drafted last year out of high school. He's going to be 19 this entire season, so we're not putting the all-star tag on him with any sort of certainty at this point. But he's got that full package, and right now we're seeing his full season debut. He hasn't been totally lights out. There hasn't been a ton of power. He's striking out maybe a little bit more than you would like to see. But again, I mean, this kid was in high school at this time last year, and now he's playing full season ball. And I kind of look at the season we saw last year from Nick York, who we're going to talk about in a second. And obviously he ended up having this huge breakout and put him in every single top 100 list, some top 50s. But the start of his season was sort of an adjustment period where he was fine, but he wasn't great, and that's sort of where Meyer is right now. He's got a 135 WRC plus. I don't really look at WRC plus for the minors too much, but he's been hitting well because he's still drawing walks. He's putting up good at bats, and when he's making contact, he's doing good things with them. It's been a lot of singles, but he's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball on a line, which is kind of what you want to see. So it's going to be a few years, obviously. He's, like I said, he's only 19. He's got to grow up a little bit physically. But if everything progresses how people expect, I mean, this is a guy who, like I said, could be a multiple-time All-Star, could stick at shortstop and have an above-average bat. And, yeah, I mean, I would still take Casas ahead of him just because of how close he is to the majors. But if Meyer hits his upside, I mean, this is a top-flight player that the Red Sox were able to get.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that a lot of times people ask, well, you've got Meyer a few years away, and are you going to sign Bogaerts long-term, and where's Story going to be, and Devers, and how are all the pieces going to fit? And Meyer is probably 4-5 years away from being a regular, everyday shortstop, which is the tough part about these things with baseball compared to other sports. But, you know, definitely in a lot of circles, he was the number one pick in a lot of those mock drafts, so ended up falling to 4 and worked out pretty well last year. Jake, what do you think? Would you put Casas or Meyer as your number one prospect, and anything to add on that?
Yeah, I'd go with Matt. I mean, I think that just Casas's proximity and what we've seen already is gonna take it for me, but I think that I agree with pretty much everything Matt said, that the upside of Marcelo Meyer is definitely a little bit higher considering the position. So yeah, I'm on the same page.
All right. So I'm going to take Nick York, who probably is third from this list, but who knows, could end up being the number one prospect in the system at some point, just because of his near elite hit tool at this point. And what a pick that was at the 17th pick in the 2020 draft, where a lot of folks had him in the second, third round potentially. And with a poor first month last year, it didn't look that great starting off in the season, but after that, he was just so good in low A. Ended up winning the batting title of the low A East division last year. I know they were broken up a little bit differently, hitting .323. After that, he was called up to Greenville, and he hit .333 with a .978 OPS in his 21 games there after a .913 OPS at low A. So he was even better once he was called up there. You know, early in the season, he was showing the gap power, but then down the stretch, York hit 11 home runs in 35 games. 11 of his 14 home runs were in the final 35 games of the season, a lot of that at high A. And some of those, you know, you would see some of the highlights, and there were some tape measure shots in there. It seems like that power is starting to develop a little bit. You see some 50 grade power, which he wasn't getting when he was first drafted. So, you know, he might be a little bit ahead of schedule with where Meyer is at second base, but as we mentioned, so many moving pieces, a few years away, and depending on which players are signed in the long term, you know, York could end up moving to a corner outfield spot or playing left field at Fenway if there isn't a spot there at second base. So early in the season, hasn't showed any power yet, but it's only been 9 games. He's hitting .316 with a .409 OBP, so kind of picking up right where he left off there. So I don't know if either of you had anything to add on York, or if we should just move along to AAA.
I don't know. I would just add real quickly on York, like you said, Bob. I mean, he doesn't have the cleanest defensive fit right now, but his bat could end up being the most advanced in the system by the end of the year. Like, there's an argument to be made that he already has the best hit tool in the system. I don't know. Would you say he already has the best hit tool, Matt?
Putting me on the spot. I guess, off the top of my head, if I thought about it a little bit more, maybe I would think that's crazy. But no, off the top of my head, I don't know if that means... what'd you say, advanced hitter? I don't know if those are the same thing. I kind of would put Casas ahead of him in that category just because of the approach. But yeah, pure hit tool, off the top of my head, I can't think of who would be better.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could argue for putting a 7 on his hit tool, honestly. That's how good it is. But the power is the question mark, right? And you've already talked about that, Bob. Like, the power is probably 40 or 50 right now. Yep. And if that takes a step forward, you're talking about an absolute monster.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to see him hit for power right after a promotion like that is when I kind of raised my eyebrows to say, okay, he took it to another level, both with his average and his slugging, and held his own right after a promotion, which was just impressive for a guy in his first year in the minor leagues. So, and then seeing some 50 grades on his power. So I'm definitely excited about York. I agree with you there. Moving along to Triple A Worcester, some of the notable assignments, players that we'll see, let's say around the top 30 prospects in that in the Sox system. We got Tristan Casas, who we already mentioned, first base. Outfielder Jaron Duran, starting pitcher Brian Mata, who is on the IL recovering from Tommy John this season. Starting pitcher Josh Winkowski. Jeter Downs, middle infielder. Starting pitcher Connor Siebold, shortstop, and all-around this year player Ryan Fitzgerald. And the two catchers who both made appearances, or at least appearances on the roster this week, in Connor Wong and Ronaldo Hernandez. Jake, we'll start with you regarding Josh Winkowski. You know, he came over in the Benintendi trade before last season and has looked pretty good. And, you know, his stats weren't totally elite last year, but showed a lot. How do you see his future unfolding? Is it in the rotation, bullpen, both? And do you see any chance he could contribute at the big league club in 2022?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's a guy whose stuff has ticked up over the last couple of seasons. He's a right-handed thrower, 6'4", you know, pretty steady performer, but not a real standout performer in any certain pitch. And I think that that's what's challenging with looking at Josh Winkowski right now, is because, like, the fastball is good, but it's not special, and the command kind of goes and comes with that pitch. The slider is probably his best secondary, or definitely is his best secondary, but I'm not sure how that pitch is really going to play up at the major league level at this point. So there's still kind of a lot that we have to see from him at AAA, and through two starts, he's definitely not dominating. He's thrown 2 5-inning starts, you know, didn't allow many earned runs, just 2 and 1 in those respective starts, but not striking out a ton of guys. So I think you'd like to see him miss more bats if he's going to stick in the rotation. I could definitely see him making a spot start or something like that if injuries start to pile up. He is on the 40-man, so that's, you know, that would be a lot easier for him to be able to do that. But really, I have a feeling that Josh Winkowski is going to be kind of a low leverage bullpen arm, maybe like a multi-inning bullpen guy. Probably not the exciting starting pitching prospect that we are all kind of longing for in this Red Sox system.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And he really hasn't been an elite strikeout pitcher at any level. You know, not much more than a K per inning. Last year, he was around 8 or 9, depending on the two levels that he was at. He did get a couple of starts in Worcester late in the season and pitched pretty well there. So I think that you make some good points there. Matt, we saw Jaron Duran in the majors last year, and it wasn't a great first go around. And obviously that happens to a lot of players, but he's back down at AAA working on some things. Do you think the next go-around will be any better? Is that the fourth outfielder that the Red Sox are kind of missing this year with, you know, Christian Arroyo playing out of position and some folks looking for a free agent outfielder? Do you think that Duran can fill that role?
Well, I mean, those are two kind of separate questions. As far as if it will get better, I mean, I don't think it can actually get any worse. So only one direction you can go. So, yeah, I think it'll be better. I mean, specifically with this Red Sox roster, I'm not sure Duran is the ideal fourth outfielder, just because it feels like they should probably have a righty rather than a lefty. That said, I mean, I'm still relatively high on Duran, probably not quite as high as I was coming into last season. Strikeout issues were obviously concerning, and that was something that people were pointing to as a potential issue even before he got to the majors. He made that adjustment with his hand placement before his at-bats, and really, he struggled to get to velocity after that. The power was still there, though, so just the power-speed combination is something that's just so hard to ignore from a prospect that I'm still pretty much in on it. I don't really think he's going to be maybe the all-star kind of player that I thought he was going to be at this time last year, but I think that speed is going to give him enough upside or enough of a floor, I should say, on the bases and the field. And then Alex Cora was kind of talking with him in spring training this year, trying to get him to use those legs a little more, maybe drop some bunts and just be more aggressive on the bases, be more of a game changer in that sense. So I hope that he takes that to heart. And it was great to see the power that he's shown the last couple of years, and I don't want that to go away, but also not to forget kind of how he got to this level and using that athleticism and kind of tapping into that hit tool a little bit. So if he can find that happy medium, he's going to be a good player. And I think the most encouraging thing for Durant's case is that he's made so many adjustments in his professional career. I mean, he coming out of college, his swing was all out of whack. The Red Sox worked with him to get his swing going, and he got he really burst onto the scene that first summer. And then during the pandemic, he added that muscle, made another adjustment to tap into the power, and that obviously played, at least initially, extremely well. So he's shown this ability time and again since turning pro to make adjustments on the fly. So that's the kind of player I'm going to bet on. There are still some concerning things, but just his makeup and his ability to make adjustments is something to hang your hat on, at least.
Yeah, and you could see it from game to game in his first call-up last year that he was adjusting his hands and having them separated and, you know, making changes on the fly. And I think it'll be good to get some extended time, you know, to get one swing and not to sell out for power, as you said, which can be tough to do when you're in Worcester and the wind's blowing out to right and you're a left-handed hitter. It's easy to probably get in bad habits there.
Yeah, that wind tunnel is tempting.
For sure. So I was going to mention Ryan Fitzgerald, who is a little under the radar, but we were seeing in spring training, you know, as a 27, soon-to-be 28-year-old prospect, not someone that we've talked about a whole lot, but hit 4 home runs and 16 at-bats during spring training and raised some eyebrows there, had 9 RBIs, 3 walks, and 3 Ks in the spring training. So with Fitzgerald, it seems like they're trying a few things out. They've started him at 5 different positions in 2022. A couple of those games have been at first base, which I found interesting, even though he's primarily a shortstop. I mentioned Travis Shaw earlier. I think by the time that we post this, I wonder whether he'll still be on the team, because it seems he let a pop-up drop in. His bat is slow. I don't think he has a hit yet this season. It just seems like that experiment has run its course a little bit, and I've wondered whether that might be a spot or even just to get a few at-bats to Fitzgerald, who is kind of selling out for power. Now, he has a 39.5% K rate early in the season. Historically, that's not a level. He's been more of a low 20% K guy, but obviously trying to hit home runs and trying to do something different, and who can blame him as a 27-28-year-old prospect to try something different, to try to make the league. But he's hitting .351, and he has 4 more home runs early in the season and an .811 slugging and an OPS over 1,200. So, you know, the walk and the K rates, a little bit different, obviously a different player. But I was reading Jeff Ponce on Baseball America, who had just mentioned how many hard-hit balls. He already had, in the first week, he had 7 extra base hits and 6 balls that were hit at 103 miles per hour or higher. That combined with the versatility, I just think he's an interesting player that they might give a shot in, you know, maybe in the next month or two, or perhaps if they don't think Cassis is ready, just somebody that can buy some time and maybe play a little bit of first base.
Free Fitzy.
I'd rather have him than Araúz.
I said that on the last podcast, Matt. I agree with you. You got to get Fitzy up here. I don't understand what the weight is. What are we doing here?
Do you think we just need a Fitzy?
I wouldn't go that far. I don't know that they need him, but I think he's a better option than ours.
This bench is absolutely anemic.
Yeah,
there's the guy named Fitzgerald in Boston, nothing on this bench.
I guess. Yeah. Hey, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah, they need Fitzy up here right now.
Do they have a Sully in the system? I see a Murph. Chris Murphy could be a Murph.
They need Murph. We need a Sully. I don't know why we don't have a Sully.
I don't think they do. It's a good question.
All right. Well, we'll try to push for that.
Get it done. Yep. Bloom.
No, but seriously, talking about Fitzy, I really do think that this guy should be up with the big club right now. You guys both mentioned two guys that probably don't belong on the roster over him at this point. And I know that the K rate is a little bit worrying, but you're literally getting nothing out of Travis Shaw, and you're getting nothing out of RAUs. So even if you have a guy who's going to come up and kind of sell out for power and defend decently at multiple positions, I mean, if he can make something happen, some impact at bats, I think that's worth already more than what you already have in RAUs and Shaw.
I agree with that.
With you.
Yeah.
Anyone else at the AAA level that either of you wanted to hit on before we move to Portland?
I mean, I just want to like peep the slash line at Jaron Duran for a second right now. I don't know if you mentioned this when you were talking about him, but 389, 522, 444 so far with a 179 WRC plus. So,
he's played a couple games though.
Yeah, he's got 23 plate appearances, but
he
four steals
time
already.
On the COVID list, so yeah, the stolen bases are nice. Him and a guy we're going to talk about maybe in Portland too. There's some exciting speed, but yeah, I didn't mention anything about his line just because he's played like four games because he missed that time with COVID. But he has played pretty well when he's been in.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, what about you, Matt? Any other AAA guys?
I mean, I guess I can mention Darvin Feltman really quickly, just because, you know, the bullpen, we're going to see a lot of guys coming up and down, and Feltman's probably the most exciting name in Portland, just in terms of name value. Obviously, when he was drafted, he was a guy that people were kind of expecting to show up in the majors, maybe that late that year in 2018, if not the next season. His career hasn't exactly gone how people have expected it. He's had some command issues. I think he kind of flew under the radar a little bit last year, bouncing back. Not really a guy that you see as a future closer at this point, but I think he's a good enough pitcher that he's going to carve out a little bit of a major league career as a decent middle reliever. I mean, I think of someone like Sawamura, who's not really exciting, but you need a couple of guys in those in your bullpen, so I think he could be that guy as soon as this year. So yeah, I think if people are still expecting him to be a future closer, they probably need to chill out a little bit. But if he's been totally written off by some people, they should probably remember that name, because I think he'll be up at some point this year.
And they might have got lucky with Feltman because of the Rule 5 draft not happening this year, and that could have been a Triple A arm, you know, that has a little more life in the last few months to his arm, closer. Not quite what he was when he was drafted, but he showed some signs in the second half, and I feel like he might have gotten plucked in the Rule 5 draft that didn't happen during the lockout.
Yeah, he seems like an ideal Rule 5 candidate for sure.
Yeah. I did want to mention Jeter Downs, who we talked about on the show a lot last year. You know, there was a stretch that we were highlighting from July 13th to August 24th where Downs hit 088 with 59 strikeouts and 113 at-bats last year. And then after that, went out to the Arizona Fall League and I think hit three home runs right away, but then ended up just at 228. I know in a league where the pitching was pretty subpar in the Fall League last year. You know, just to give an update on where he's at, he struck out 23 times in 48 at-bats to start this season. Obviously had a tough season last year after skipping a level entirely and going right to AAA, but was hoping to see a little better start out of Jeter Downs. Some of the reports that his timing and swing is just still out of whack, and obviously there's time to fix that, but was hoping to see a little better start from Downs this year at AAA, so see where it goes from there. All right, so moving to Double A Portland, just some of the notable assignments there. There's a starting pitcher, Brian Bayo, starting pitcher, Jay Groom, starting pitcher, Brandon Walter, and starting pitcher, Chris Murphy. So obviously the Portland rotation is loaded, and we'll talk about a couple of those guys. Middle infielder, Christian Koss, David Hamilton, also middle infielder, and then Frank German as well, who is a relief pitcher who has become a little bit more notable over the last year. So starting with you, Matt, Brandon Walter kind of started last season as just a nice story, and then it started getting real in the second half, and he was being talked about as maybe a fringe major league prospect, and all of a sudden he was arguably the pitcher of the year in the minor leagues last year. So he's 25 years old and entering double A, but what is the future with Walter? Do you see him as, even at his age, a potential major league prospect?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it's, yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's a question. Jake and I were talking a little bit before we started recording. I think he's the most interesting prospect in the system. Definitely, I don't think it's particularly close among pitchers. Last season was absolutely absurd. The former 26th round pick just came absolutely out of nowhere. Started in the bullpen in Salem and then made a couple of starts where he was just lights out. Got promoted to high A again, was totally lights out. ERA was 3.70, which is a little, I mean, I guess not great, but the peripherals are much better than that. He was, like Bob said, probably the best pitcher in the system last year. There was still some trepidation about really buying into him just because of the age. He was 24 years old in his age 24 season last year, playing in leagues where, I mean, frankly, the top prospects in those leagues are typically at least a couple years younger than he was. So between that, the relatively small sample, especially in the middle of the season before he really kept piling on those starts, and then the lack of prospect pedigree being 26th round pick, it was understandable to not want to buy in. But at this point, I just don't know how you can't. All the reports out of spring training are saying that this guy's stuff is really exciting. I mean, the slider, I think, has taken a big jump. He's got a really good changeup. He's got a big fastball that can get up to the mid-90s when he needs it from the left side, too. And he started his season just picking up exactly where he left off. He hasn't allowed a run through two starts in 11 innings. He's struck out over a batter per inning, 12 walks, still hasn't, or sorry, 12 strikeouts, still hasn't walked anybody. He's hit a batter, but no walks. He's just doing everything you could ask for him. I mean, you could point to the age all you want, but at a certain point, you just gotta throw your hands up. He can only pitch against who he's being put up against, and he is absolutely dominating anybody who's put in front of him. So, yeah, I'm really excited about him, and if he makes a couple more starts like this, I might start thinking about him as the best pitching prospect in the system, which seems outrageous, but again, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves.
I think that with ages and rounds that people were drafted in 2019 and 2020, that, yeah, you have to throw this stuff out the window. Everybody's a year older than the level that they should be at least for the most part. A bunch of crazy stuff happened in between that, and we don't know what they were doing and what kind of workouts were going on and what pitches they were working on, and Walter was somebody who came out the other side as just a completely different player that... Hell, 26th round pick. I hadn't heard of him entering the season, full disclosure. And you're right, the 3.70 ERA is misleading because he got bombed twice and was outstanding every other outing once he got promoted to high A and was in the rotation long term. You know, as you said, the peripherals, walk per nine around two, K per nine over 13. That's hard to beat.
It's outrageous.
12 starts. So, Jake. Brian Bayo, I mean, you know, it sounds like Brandon Walter, potentially the best pitcher in the organization. Would you take Bayo or Walter long-term?
Oh, give me Bayo. And I love Walter. And I agree with a lot of what Matt said there. But, you know, the fact that Bayo is 22 years old and just a super-duper athletic frame here. He's a little bit on the skinny side for a starter. He's 6'1", 170. But in his two starts so far this spring, you know, he's struck out 10 and then he struck out 8 over 5 innings. And in the second start, he allowed 2 solo shots. That was the only damage against him, and no runs at all in the first start. So the stuff here is just crazy. The Red Sox stats account had a little... picture, like a little lineup here of Bayo's delivery and Pedro's delivery, and it was like eerily similar. And you know, I looked at that and I was like, okay, don't get too excited because this kid's not going to be Pedro, because no one is. But like, still, if he can be anything close to that, I mean, he's got a couple of the traits that remind me of Pedro. He's got the electric fastball. He can crank that thing up to like 99 miles an hour. He sits in the high 90s. He's got a really good changeup. I mean, definitely not even in the realm of Pedro, but it's a plus pitch. And then his slider is a pretty good pitch, too. So I mean, starter's repertoire there. I think the biggest question with him is whether or not his frame is going to allow him to, you know, continue to be a starter. But I think that if it doesn't, he's an impact reliever. So I would say that Bayo has probably the highest ceiling and probably one of the better floors in terms of being an impact reliever. Because I think actually in this day and age, you know, having a late inning reliever who can go a couple of innings is very impactful and almost more impactful than like the fifth starter profile. So I really love the stuff. I'm going to be interested to see whether his stuff can tick up even more, potentially with the breaking ball. I think that's the pitch that he needs maybe a little bit more work on. But yeah, as long as he stays healthy, this would be my pick for the top pitching prospect in the system. And I actually don't think it's that close. I put him in a different category.
Yeah, I should be clear that I also think that Bayo is the better prospect. I think Walter could potentially make it a conversation later in the season, but I just want to throw that out there before people tweet at me. Please don't tweet at me, ever, please.
Okay. All right, in conclusion, do not ever tweet at this man.
that's absolutely right. Thank you.
Leave him alone.
God. The man who is on Twitter with multiple accounts. On Sunday, Bayo had 24 swinging strikes in 5 innings, which I found to be outrageous.
Seems good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll work.
I listed him in our roundtable as the prospect I was most interested in seeing kind of how things unfold this year. And you're right, it could go multiple directions, but I think they'll be positive either way. You know, worst case scenario, he could be a great closer or a great multi-inning reliever, but there's definitely upside for more. And to keep the theme at AA, you know, they've been winning and losing a lot of games 2-1, 1-0, because it's all about the pitching staff there. And Jay Groom is there, who has really had a roller coaster ride and still is just 23 years old, incredibly, after being drafted 5-6 years ago now. And it seemed, if you asked me a year ago, that there was relief risk and 40-man risk with Groom, that I didn't know kind of what the long-term would hold because of how few innings he had thrown in his career between Tommy John and then missing the season in the pandemic. And there were 3 seasons that he threw a total of 4 innings and only had 66 in his career. But he got through over 100 innings last year. And while his stats didn't look great, there was a lot of good signs, I thought. You know, started with 3 pretty putrid starts to open the season, but then over his next 13, he only gave up more than 3 runs twice, and both of those were 4 earned. You know, he threw 5 or more innings in 9 of those 13 starts and really just got on a roll and was able to get the call to double A, which surprised me a little bit because with the innings bump, I thought they might kind of take this as a positive and go from there. But he came up for 3 starts at double A at the end of the season. He had 26 strikeouts and 15 and two-thirds innings at double A. Had 2 great starts and 1 decent one. So, you know, I think the fact that he threw it ended up being 97 innings total, finished strong after all of that time off, I thought was a great sign. And now, you know, he is at double A starting the season there. He doesn't still have the near elite curveball that he had before Tommy John surgery, but has a lot of good pitches. It still has a good fastball, good curveball, decent slider and changeup. His control can be shaky at times, but when he's locked in, he can get you those 9, 10, 11 strikeout games and had quite a few of those last year. So I think it's a good sign that Groom pitched well there and has looked decent in his first 3 starts. I think he had 1 poor start out of those at the beginning of the year. So, you know, with Groom, just another name to go along with another one. You know, Chris Murphy, who's a fourth pitcher that's there. It's a really exciting staff at AA, and it will be interesting to see how they progress throughout this year. And even if we might see one of these arms, if they're in a pinch, if Bayo looks great and they need him for September call-up or something like that late in the season, it'll be interesting to see where all of these arms go. Any other names or anything that either of you wanted to add at the AA level?
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
I would just say Frank German is a really interesting guy that I'm going to be watching for. I'm actually going to be up in Portland as you're listening to this now on Friday. And, you know, he's been used as a reliever this year. He's 24 years old. He was one of the guys that was acquired from the Yankees in the Adam Ottavino trade. So he was a prospect there. But he's moved to a relief role, and so far this year at Portland, he's got five innings pitched in relief. One of those was a two-inning appearance. No walks, no earned runs, lots of strikeouts. He's a fastball changeup guy mostly. The knock on him was kind of command issues. You know, the fastball, even though it's got good velo and pretty decent movement, it hasn't actually always been a pitch that he can command and put it where he wants to, but you know, the changeup's pretty good, and he seems to be missing a lot of bats, and the fastball's playing up a little bit more in relief. So I think he's an interesting guy. I would not be shocked if he is in the Red Sox bullpen next season. I don't think he'll probably factor in this year unless a lot of stuff goes wrong, but you know, he does. He seems like a useful middle relief guy. I'm not going to throw like any sort of back end stuff, but I think he could be like good Ryan Brazier, you know, like that type of player. I don't know. He's an interesting right hander and definitely, you know, a trademark Bloom move, I think, here, and just kind of taking on that contract of Ottavino, getting an interesting prospect, and maybe you've got a reliever for the future. So, very interesting guy.
I like it.
I got news, Jake. Good Ryan Brazier is a back-end guy. We don't see much of him anymore, but right. Good, yeah. Ryan Brazier was a back-end guy, at least.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe he has that potential, but I'm kind of thinking like sixth or seventh inning role, but a reliable sixth or seventh inning.
I think that's spot on. I actually think there's a chance we see him this year. It's more likely than not that he won't be up in the majors, but I don't think it's impossible at all. I mean, relievers can move quickly. They catch fire, they can move.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true. And the ability that he has to go a couple innings too, I think that's only plays to his favor.
Yeah.
One other name I wanted to mention was David Hamilton. One of the picks that came over in the, what was it? The Hunter Renfro trade, right? With yeah. Bradley, and I think we'll talk about the other name shortly, but this guy just runs at every level, and I was reading that even in the COVID year, he played in some indie league where he was 20 for 20, and then he stole 52 bases last year between high A and double A. He had 41 in 68 games at high A, and then 11 in 33 games at double A. You know, good defense up the middle, obviously excellent speed, and kind of a line drive hitter, but he's got 8 steals in 10 games already, and he's hitting .308, and it just seems like every day that I'm looking at the box scores, he's got one or two hits and probably has a steal. So I think that's an interesting name that seems to have maybe a backup type of player, but plays good enough defense up the middle that I think he has potentially a year or two down the line to maybe be a utility player on the team.
Absolutely my favorite kind of player. Just hits line drives, draws some walks, doesn't strike out, and just runs like crazy. He's got 8 steals in the first 10 games. Also got ejected. We're recording this Thursday night. Also got ejected a couple of hours ago for being part of a major brawl. So he's got that going for him. Yeah, did you not see that video? Oh, man. Yeah, the fight in Sea Dogs. Somebody was, I don't know who the pitcher was, but yeah, they were chirping a little bit at Tyreek Reed, which is not something that I would suggest anyone do. And Reed
that guy's
dropped
yoked.
Him. Yeah, Reed dropped him, and then the pitcher got up and just went after Hamilton for some reason, and I don't think Hamilton took it too kindly. But yeah, so he's got a little fight in him, too. We know that.
That's great. That's the first thing I'll be doing in 20 minutes is looking that video up. So,
Matt, before you mentioned that Hamilton was your favorite type of player, I was about to say, Matt, this player is exactly your type of guy.
As soon as they made the trade, I was stoked. Absolutely stoked.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him. He's really interesting. Do you guys think that if this team ends up in the playoffs, that he might be somebody who could be used as a speed guy off the bench?
Depends what Duran's doing.
Yeah.
Who is that guy in Kansas City that has like 4 titles and 10
Terrence
career
Gore?
At bats?
Yeah.
Terrence Gore.
Yeah. And Quentin Berry too. Quentin Berry was on like 5 straight ALCS teams or something like that. He got signed like a week before the playoffs every year by like the best team just to have a base runner. The Red Sox had him. I forget what year they had him, but they did go for him one of those years.
Yeah. Very interesting. Nice to have a speed guy in the system.
Yeah. For sure. All right, going down to High A Greenville, some notable assignments there. Second baseman Nick York, we already talked about. Tyler McDonough, who plays all over the infield and also plays some outfield. Gilberto Jimenez, outfielder. Outfielder Sadan Rafaela. Third base / first base Alex Benelis. Shortstop Matthew Lugo. And another notable starting pitcher that has had a good start in Chi Young Liu. I can start off with Matthew Lugo. He was a second round pick in 2019. He'll turn 21 in May, and, you know, on the surface, just hit 270 last year, 4 homers, 50 RBI. Not someone that completely jumped off the page, but you got to remember that these guys had a season off, and they're in the lower levels of the minors, and in his last 61 games, he hit .303 with a .383 on-base percentage, and very good defensive player, great work ethic from all reports, and his defense was there all along, but it was just, will the offense pick up? And early in the season, he is hitting .444 as he's 20 for 45. 9 of those are extra base hits. He's got 6 doubles, 2 triples, and a home run. You know, maybe more of a utility player, probably someone to lump in with Hamilton, who we were just talking about there. But just such a good start. And I know a lot of the hitters in High A ran into this because of some easier matchups and some easier ballparks at the beginning of the season, but just one home run. So I think that he was hitting regardless of if there was a short porch or not, and had 7 out of 8 multi-hit games to start the season. So Lugo was a name that I wanted to highlight at High A. Jake, Sadan Rafaela, he's stolen the show the first couple weeks of the season in a similar kind of going hand-in-hand with Lugo, and in some circles has passed a player that Matt is going to talk about shortly, which was unthinkable a year ago in Gilberto Jimenez. And how much of this do you think is for real with Rafaela?
Well, I will tell you that the batting line has me scratching my head because he's just never done anything remotely like this. His slash line right now through 53 plate appearances. So it's a small sample size, but not minuscule. 380, 415 with an 840 slug. And that's the thing that's really eye-opening. Right. The dude has 6 home runs and 5 doubles so far. Rafael is not a big dude. He's like 5'8", 160 maybe. He's just a small guy, but apparently he's been putting a lot of power into his swing this year. I don't know what to make of it. What I do know is real about Rafaela is that his defense is incredible. He has great instincts in the outfield. He can play all 3 positions. He's an elite fielder. Like, he could come up to the major leagues and field effectively tomorrow. But if his bat is really taking a jump, which, I mean, he's not a 460 ISO guy. I mean, no one is.
I was gonna say, who is?
It's like he's hitting like Babe Ruth right now. I don't know what to make of this. But I mean, if he can even maintain a little bit more of this hard contact, all of a sudden this profile, I mean, he needs to be pushed into the top 10 of this system, if not even higher than that, with the defensive floor. So if he hits just a little bit, this is a guy to monitor. And I think that this could be a really, really valuable player for the Red Sox. And I think I'm most excited about this because, you know, as you mentioned, the guy that Matt's going to talk about has actually taken a step back in his defense. And Rafael is just, he's so easy to watch play defense.
Yeah, what do you think, Matt? Do you want to talk about Jimenez a little bit? And what are your thoughts on Rafaela so far as well?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll start with Rafaela because he's been the talk of the system so far. I mean, I think, obviously, like you said, nobody can hit for power sustainably what he's done so far. But I don't think it's like the idea of him hitting for power isn't that outrageous. I obviously haven't seen him, but I'm assuming there's been some sort of adjustment with the swing because he's always been able to hit the ball pretty hard. It's just been line drives. I mean, he had 20 doubles and 9 triples last season. So, I mean, he was going gap to gap and he was getting extra base hits, but he wasn't really lifting that hard contact for home runs. It sure seems from the stats that he's doing that so far. So, I mean, I don't think it's outrageous that he can be maybe like a 15-20 home run guy. Whether or not he hits enough, I mean, there are some hit tool questions is another problem. I think he's probably still a super utility kind of player for a ceiling, but he's super exciting. And like Jake said, I mean, he's got the floor with his defense and his speed, and that power that he's tapping into is really exciting. As far as Jimenez goes, I mean, I think he's, I don't know, I kind of feel like people are too down on him. We've mentioned it a bunch of times, but it was just last season was kind of weird coming off the missed season, and Jimenez was dealing with some nagging injuries off and on throughout the year, and he just never really quite got going. And even though it felt like a really down season, he wasn't bad. He was just okay. He wasn't great. I think a lot of people, myself included, went into last season expecting Jimenez to be the guy in the system to take the big jump and sort of have the Nick York season, and it didn't happen. So I think people are reading that as like a bust, and that's definitely the wrong way to read it. He's another guy that probably would have been among the most interesting Rule 5 potential draft picks this year, having not played above low A, but having the ceiling and sort of even a little bit of the floor because the defense, it may have taken a step back, but you still got the instincts, and I think he can still be a good defensive player. I don't know that he probably wouldn't have gotten picked. It's just hard to keep a position player on the roster that long, but I think he's a guy that teams would have thought about because, like I said, I think people are still too down on him. It's just about how much he can make hard contact. I think he's going to make contact. He's still adjusting a little bit to switch hitting, but I think he's going to put the ball in play. Last season when he put the ball in play, it was with a lot of weak contact, and that can't continue. But, I mean, he's only 21 years old. He had the missed season. He's off to a pretty good start this season with the power. I'd like to see him draw a few more walks as he gets older, but I'm not giving up on him yet. I still think I would probably still put him ahead of Rafaela. Ask me again in 2 months, I might have a different answer, but right now I'd probably stick with Jimenez.
I kind of want to see him give up switch hitting. What do you think about that?
You know, to be honest, I am not close enough to the situation to have a strong opinion either way.
Yeah, it's just his swing is so different from both sides of the plate, and I'd like to see him focus on just one side. And we've seen what can happen with that when players do make that decision. We saw it last year with the guy from Baltimore, Cedric Mullins. Yeah. So I think it's there. The other thing that I've kind of heard about Jimenez is just like some effort questions. So hopefully those things have been, you know, remedied and he has a big year. Because I agree with you, Matt. He's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, that's interesting because before last season, it was the makeup that was like one of the things that so many people pointed to. So that's interesting.
Who knows?
Yeah, Shelley made that point a lot last year that, you know, if it's not working out, if he's slapping from one side and his eye isn't that great, and, you know, at some point you got to give up one of those sides and focus on being a major league hitter from one side rather than being not a major league hitter at both. So, you know, I think it's interesting. As you said, Matt, though, he's still young and he could be a swing change away from breaking out, you know, and becoming that top prospect again. So he didn't have a bad season. He ended up, if I remember correctly, with a pretty decent batting average, 306. You know, yeah, we want to see a few more walks, but he hit 306 last year. So you can build on that, and it's probably not as grim as some places made it out to be. I would agree with that. Any other high A Greenville players of note for either you, Jake, or Matt?
I think Chi Jung Liu is a guy who we should probably mention. He's coming off a pretty awesome start just a couple days ago on April 19th. He was one of the players that the Red Sox, well, I guess the player that the Red Sox brought over from Taiwan. He's a pitcher, pretty good fastball slider, has a splitter as well. But in his last start, he had five innings pitched, no earned runs, one walk, and nine strikeouts. So very, very impressive start from him. He's got a power arm, pretty good stuff. I don't know a ton about Chi Jung Liu, but I was excited to see that. Matt, I know you wrote about him a little bit in the minor league lines. Yeah. I mean, is there anything else that we know about Chi Jung Liu at this point?
I think I'm surprised by how under the radar he is, to be honest. He was a relatively big money signing right after the 2019 season, which means that his first year in the system got wiped out because of COVID, and he didn't even really get that brief time of spring training before things got shut down because he was coming from Taiwan. Obviously, the whole COVID situation started in that part of the world. So he was isolated basically right up until he had to go home and everything got shut down. So he never really got his career going when he was supposed to. He was a two-way player in Taiwan, a pretty exciting one. He's stuck to pitching. I think the stuff is interesting. He's still kind of raw. I'm not really sure if that command's ever going to get to a point where he can stick in the rotation, but I think he's a guy that should be able to move excitingly through the system, and maybe by the time he gets to Double-A, Triple-A, he makes a shift to the bullpen. But like I said, I'm surprised that even prospect people aren't talking a little bit more about him, because the stuff will stand out. Whether or not the command will play, I think, is a question. And I'm not saying he's a surefire major leaguer or anything, but I definitely think he's a guy that should be monitored in the system.
I'm glad you called out the kind of his transition to America and the pandemic happening, because who knows what this gun was, but he was throwing like 102 allegedly when they first signed him, and they signed him for $750,000. So I think that they really had high expectations, or higher expectations. Yeah. And then when he was thrown in the low 90s and didn't have great control in, I don't know if it was the alt site or whatever was going on that year. Yeah, I mean, the guy had a weird year. Everybody did. And it's starting to come back. And he's topping out closer to mid-90s, touching 97, 98 at times. So I agree. I think that's a name that they invested pretty heavily in. And sure, it took a year or so to get back to where he needed to be, but I think that's a good call out by both of you there, because he's an interesting arm that has starting pitching experience and could move up the system there.
I have a quick question for you both. I know you've both been monitoring the system for a long time now. Do you feel like the Bloom years so far, what we've seen here in Bloom's time, that they're more willing to move guys from being starters to being relievers quicker than we saw with Dombrowski? Because if I remember, Dombrowski was a little slow to act with taking guys that maybe didn't have enough of a starter's repertoire, whose stuff wasn't playing up, and moving them to that role to see if they would be successful.
I feel like I remember, and I don't remember the name, and I think there were a few, but I think the last year or two of the Dombrowski era is really when that organizational shift came where they were starting to make that change more quickly. And I think that might be a league-wide thing too. But I think that was starting. I think that's more of an organizational thing than even anything to do with Dombrowski or Bloom. I think that's something that, and I think it's smart. I think they should do it more quickly, to be honest. I don't think, Frank German last year, for instance, I don't think he should have made one start. I think it was clear immediately he was a reliever and they should have developed. I wish they'd be a little more aggressive sometimes. Ryan Zephyrjohn is another guy that I wish they would have been more aggressive with in that role. But yeah, I think that's probably started 2018, 2019, somewhere in that range.
I think there's just more interesting arms right now.
Yeah,
that's most of which are starters, that it'll give them the opportunity to develop relievers like that, to make that switch, to say, okay, we've got three guys at AAA and four guys at AA and a couple others behind that. And I mean, we have a lot of people to talk about. You know, we've hit on most of them at this point, but this is a much, much better system than it was, especially with pitching a few years ago. And I think it gives the opportunity to do that. But I know what you're saying there too, Matt, that I think it's a league-wide difference than there was maybe 3 or 4 years ago with that.
Certainly a lot more depth at each one of these levels than we had in like 2019.
Yeah, I think 2019 was like the, or maybe it was 2018. Whenever Michael Chavis was the clear number one prospect in the season.
Oh boy.
Was the low point.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a daily Red Sox podcast to do at that time, you'd probably feel the effects of that.
Wrapping up at low A Salem, some of the notable assignments there. Marcel Meyer, shortstop, we already talked about. Blaze Jordan, corner infielder. Starting pitcher, Wilkelman Gonzalez. Infielder, Edinson Paulino. And middle infielder, Brianer Bonassi. And we'll throw in with that, Jake, someone you want to talk about. Is he at extended spring training? Miguel Blaise as well. Probably will be in low A soon enough. So we got the Just Blaze portion of the podcast. Matt, do you want to start with Blaze Jordan? On recording in the week of 420. Thank you. Very important note.
I have no idea what to make of Blaze Jordan at this point. I was not a fan of that draft pick. I didn't mind the idea of going for York, even not knowing what he was going to turn into. But I didn't mind the idea of going under slot and then picking somebody with a little more upside. I didn't really love the idea of going for a power strikeout kind of guy. But I mean, when he played last year, he showed some exciting stuff, and he showed why he was able to get that overslot deal and why he was one of the most famous people in the draft from some of his YouTube clips from high school. But it's been a weird start to the season for him. He has not been good at all. The power just hasn't been there, but he's also not striking out. I don't know. It's just very confusing. I'm never super high on these kind of low contact, high power players. So I am probably lower on Jordan than some of the other prospect evaluators out there, and I'm probably wrong because they're probably smarter than me, but I don't know. I need to see him do it for an extended period of time. And even last season, he was kind of dealing with injuries. He only played in 28 games between the complex and A-ball. I need to see him stay on the field. I need to see him make contact and hit for power over a full season. I think the ceiling is really high. I just am not super optimistic that he's going to get there.
He did strike out 18.4% of the time in those 28 games between Florida Complex and Low A last year at 18 years old. So
yeah, that's the other thing. The age is, he's extremely young. He was like one of the youngest players in that draft class. I mean, some of this is just, in retrospect, I probably shouldn't have been the one to talk about Blaze Jordan. Some of this is just bias. I'm not crazy about these kind of players. I usually tend to see the worst case scenario playing out for them. But I mean, if he can even get to like a close to average hit tool, he's going to be a major league player. Even if he's at first base, I mean, he plays some third base now, but he's probably going to end up as a first baseman. So I mean, there's a path to him to be a really exciting player. I just get worried about those contact issues, even though they haven't showed up in pro ball yet.
No, I agree with what you're saying. I think it can be a scary profile, but I was encouraged by the lack of strikeouts, especially at that age. But yeah, definitely a slow start and something to keep an eye on this year. Jake, Miguel Blaise, I don't have a creative question for you, so go nuts.
All right, I'll blaze my own trail here. Yeah, that was pretty
good podcast, guys. All
right. I'll see you next week.
So Miguel Blaze is a guy I wanted to talk about just because he's probably the most interesting J2 signing that they've made in some time. He was signed, 2021, and he was a pretty big money signing, $1.5 million from the Red Sox, but he's a true five-tool potential type outfielder, and he's only 18 years old right now, 6'3", 170, right-handed bat, pretty good fielder, pretty athletic, he's kind of above average across the board, and in terms of everything, power, hit, run, field, throw. I mean, he's a great ball of clay. And he's one of these guys that there was a lot of chatter about at spring training this year. Apparently he looked really good down there. So I think that if we're looking for one name, that when Casas graduates, when York graduates, when, you know, some of these top guys graduate, I think he could be up there with the top names in this system and maybe the next guy way down the line who could be an impact player and maybe even a starter in the major leagues. So just a name that I wanted to mention. He's not actually playing stateside right now at this point, but he's somebody who performed pretty well in the DSL last year as a 17-year-old and somebody to look for this season. I don't know a ton about him yet, but just from what I see and what I've been hearing about him, he's a guy to keep an eye on, and I'm excited about him.
I think he's top five in the system by the end of the year.
I think that's a good call.
I mean, everybody that's gotten eyes on him, which is none of us, has said that he's the real deal, and, you know, he's probably other than Bayo. He would have been second on my list to say I want to see what direction this goes because I've heard nothing but great things, but haven't seen him play yet.
I didn't realize Sox prospects already had him at number 8. Wow.
Yeah, and that was basically all from their spring training look at him too. So, I mean, it's going to be very exciting to see what he does when he does come stateside. And if he can get a taste of low A this year, which I'm not sure he will, but
I think he'll probably get it at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Assuming he plays well or decently well at on the complex. I think he'll end the season in Salem. I think that'll probably be the plan.
Yeah. Be good to see.
Salem's ace pitcher, Wilkelman Gonzalez, I thought it was notable that Fangraphs had ranked Gonzalez as their number 4 prospect in the system, which was just a lot higher than I had seen on any other list, but seems like has a really good arsenal and bulked up during the year shutdown, you know, when he was 17 on one end and now coming into the season, he just turned 20. Has a fastball of 93 to 95 that can touch 98, which seems to be a plus pitch. It sounds like his changeup is a plus pitch as well. Needs to find a breaking ball to go with it, slider or curve that is more in the 50 to 55 range, but has plenty of time to do that as he's just at low A. But it sounds, you know, in by all accounts, that the off-speed stuff is with movement and that the spin rates are good and he throws hard. So you can't ask for more than that in a profile, especially for a kid that was 19 pitching as well as he did last year. He had 11.8 K per 9 in his 7 starts in the complex league last year, but more importantly, only walked 2 batters per 9. That bumped up a little bit at Salem to 4 per 9, but just in a couple of starts. But his ERA was 1.53 at Salem as well, and he hasn't disappointed early this year. He's had 2 outings, 1 of 2 innings, 1 of 5 innings, which they'll probably alternate outings like that throughout the year to keep his innings in check. But
the 2 inning was, for what it's worth, the 2 inning was a rain out, or rained, yeah, suspended.
There you go.
So that's what he went through too.
Well, he struck out 12 in those 7 innings, so including in a rain-shortened outing. So, yeah, I mean, I like everything that I've heard, and I'm going to have to catch some low-A games this year to see Gonzalez pitch, especially, as I mentioned, when I saw him at 4 on the Fangraphs list, that was eye-opening. Anything else that I have forgot or that we want to add, or any players throughout the system, Matt or Jake, that you'd like to add today?
I don't think so. I think we hit on most of the big ones.
Yeah, I would agree. I would just throw out one more name that we didn't really mention. Well, we mentioned him a little bit, but I think Chris Murphy's interesting. He's a guy who's at Portland right now who I'm excited to see how he develops this year. But just overall, looking at the system from a high level, this is the best it's been since the years that Devers was in the system, probably. So what are we talking about? That's 2017. That's, that's about as, I think it's as good as it's been since 2017. What do you think, Matt?
Jake, I wish you had told me you were going to bring this up. I did a whole thing about this over the off season, and it's going to take me too long to find. I think they're a little bit below that. But yeah, I mean, this is the best it's been probably since that time. I don't think they're that close to when they were really at their heyday, but it's exciting, and they've got guys pretty much at every level. I mean, we just went over every level, so it should only keep getting better from here. I mean, I may have some issues with some of the things they do team building wise, but the farm system is certainly trending up, and they deserve all the credit for that.
I think it allows them to make trades over the next 3 months as well. You know, you saw that with Aldo Ramirez last year.
Yeah, good point.
Was a name that I loved and was really looking forward to see him. But then when he got traded, and then when I sat down and looked at the farm this year, as they added Benellis and Hamilton, and, you mentioned German, and you mentioned, and then you got Whitlock coming over last year. They've done a lot of depth fringe moves, and I think it will allow them to make trades in June and July. Maybe they send out two top 20 prospects in the same way that they brought two in the Renfro trade. So I think it will allow them to do that more easily, because they're, as we've seen so far, there very well could be some needs here in the next couple of months.
And they got something for everybody too. I mean, they got all different positions. They got all different profiles. They got close to the majors, far away with upside. I mean, whatever an organization, yeah, whatever different organizations are looking for, they should be able to meet the need.
Yeah, and on top of that, they've got four picks in the top 100 in this upcoming draft, so only going to add to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both. You can find me on Twitter at BobOsgood15. Jake is on the red seat. You can find him on Twitter at DevJake. And Matt's on the Over the Monster podcast, but if we learn anything today, it's to not tweet at Matt.
Don't even think about it.
You want to promote anything, Matt. Okay. All right. Thank you both. We will talk to you soon.